to the Eating Disorder Therapist podcast. This is a podcast to help you find peace with food and overcome disordered eating. And I'm Harriet Frew, aka the Eating Disorder Therapist. And I'm so excited to share with you all kinds of stories, tips, information, and guest interviews to help you on your journey in finding peace with food. So thank you so much for listening today. Now, today I have another bite-size episode, and it's from one of my lovely listeners who is struggling with sweet cravings, something that so many of us can relate to. Now, my listener recognises as well that she wasn't always allowed sweet foods as a child, and now as an adult, these foods understandably feel very compelling and induce strong cravings, and she feels very deprived when not having sugar. Now, before I launch in, I want to say that I am certainly not anti-sugar, and I'm a supporter of intuitive eating principles with no good and bad foods and everything being permissible. So I personally eat chocolate, biscuits, processed foods, things with sugar in daily. So the focus of this podcast is more about when you feel that your sweet cravings are taking over and that maybe you're not eating other foods that could be more nutritious, and perhaps sugar is ruling your mind, disrupting your day, and taking up too much of your life, I guess. So just to really reiterate though, I'm not anti-sugar. I really firmly believe that you can have sugar as part of your overall eating plan, and sugar is pleasurable, enjoyable, and a really lovely part of life. I think as well it's also really worth acknowledging that as human beings we are hardwired to like sugar and to desire it, because our bodies use glucose as a primary fuel, so our brains are massively evolved to want sweet foods. So consuming sugar as well activates the brain's reward system. We get that release of dopamine, the feel-good chemical messenger, and we feel good, you know, at least temporarily. And as hunter-gatherers, back in the past, you know, we would have gorged probably on honey and berries when they were available, filling up our bellies, intent on survival, with the possible fear of food shortages through the winter being a real possibility. So, of course, now we do live in a world where we don't just have sugary foods limited to certain times of the year. They're available 24/7 in brightly coloured packages, calling us many, many times of the day. You know, they're available everywhere. So we obviously need to be quite compassionate towards ourselves, recognising that humans do like sugar and we're wired for this. So if you find yourself in a relationship with sugar that you don't feel that is serving you, be really compassionate towards yourself and try not to beat yourself up because of your humanness is calling you to like sugar. And that's just really understandable because it's part of survival. So I am going to talk now about 9 things to consider if you are feeling that sugar is taking over and you're feeling these intense cravings. Okay, so number one. Okay, anyone that listens to this podcast will probably predict what I'm going to say. Are you eating enough, generally? Okay, because I think so often what happens is we end up eating more sugary foods because we're just not eating enough. We're not eating foods that really satisfy us. We're not kind of filling ourselves up properly with a balance of nutrition at our main meals and snack times. So we're kind of using sugar as a way to supply that glucose because the brain is demanding fuel. Now, I have completely been in this place myself. In my own recovery in the early days, I was not sort of deliberately restricting, but I was still probably under eating a bit in the day and probably just not eating quite enough carbohydrate. And you know, I would find that I was probably sort of under eating a bit at my breakfast and my lunch, and by mid-afternoon I would be really starting to get quite hungry and I would be really, really craving sugar. And I used to be in a pattern of, you know, just regularly eating quite a lot of sugar later on in the day. And again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I have noticed a massive difference in myself now when I have a really substantial breakfast, you know, including protein, slow release carbohydrates, good fats. When I'm having a mid-morning snack as well, again, Often for myself, I would have something like nuts or something that's quite such slow release with, you know, not going to cause that blood sugar spike. Then I'll have quite a substantial lunch. I'm making sure I'm having, again, like protein, slow release carbohydrates, good fats as well, maybe some veggies as well. So when I'm sort of doing that and I'm really fueling myself, I have found that my sugar cravings have reduced significantly. I still eat sugar every day, I still enjoy it, it's still part of life, but it doesn't feel like it used to feel when I felt that I just wanted more sugar and I almost felt really sort of driven to find it. And so yeah, really have a reflect on that, because I think it is something that many, many people are doing, and you might not be actively restricting your eating, but you're still just under eating a bit, and you might not even be under eating for diety type reasons. You might be under eating because you are so busy in the day, or you're preoccupied with other things, and then suddenly your kind of hunger hits you mid-afternoon later on in the day, and that's when you're really reaching for sugar because of you have just got yourself into a place where you're over hungry, tired, lacking energy, and sugar is the natural thing to lean towards. So that's the first one. Make sure you're eating enough. And one thing I'd say again and again on this podcast as well is the regular eating is really the boring, unsexy work of eating disorder recovery. It is so necessary though. And if you're doing the regular eating, if you're really working to stabilize your blood sugar, you are going to be so much more resilient to be able to deal with the emotional side of life and to cope with things generally. If your physiology in your body is unstable, if you are often really, really hungry, hangry, if your blood sugar is all over the place, it's really then hard to deal with life because of your resilience is going to be down. You're not going to be able to concentrate so much. Your willpower is going to be lower. You're just going to feel much more emotional and a bit more unstable in your mood. And that's not because there's anything wrong with you. It just means that you're probably not fueling yourself in that really self-caring way that we need to do in recovery. There you go. Sorry, I always bang on about that a lot, but I'm passionate about believing that is an essential part of the recovery journey. Okay, number two. Make sure that you are planning in perhaps bits of sugar into your normal eating regime and that you're not veering towards that all or nothing place. Because I think what sometimes people will do as well is they will be having sort of sugar-free breakfast, sugar-free snacks, sugar-free lunch, and then they're feeling perhaps a bit deprived, and then sugar cravings really come later in the day, and it becomes a little bit all or nothing. It's almost like, this is when my eating's good, this is when my eating's not so good, and I'm veering towards sugar. Now, I know myself, I include bits of sugar with my main meals. Often I will often have some chocolate after I've had my lunch, also have some more chocolate after I've had my dinner, but I'm quite mindful of eating those foods as well, often perhaps after I've had a substantial meal, so I'm not getting the blood sugar spikes in the same way, and I'm also very much permitting those foods in as part of my normal day. So I know in a way that I'm having my sugar, that I'm having my bits of chocolate, the things I really like, and that is completely permitted. There is no debate or internal struggle about whether I'm allowed this or not. It's just part of my eating plan. So I think again, if you are struggling with sugar cravings, make sure that you are genuinely permitting sugar in, and think about how you do that as well. Like, it is more helpful for your body physiology, perhaps not to eat sugar on an empty stomach, to eat it after a main meal possibly. And I'm not saying these are rigid rules. I firmly believe in intuitive eating principles, and I do not believe that you should be rigidly stuck in this pattern. But I think again, I view it more under the umbrella of self-care. So some days I may still eat sugar on an empty stomach, and I will enjoy it and I will celebrate it and I will absolutely love the freedom of doing that. But I'll also be aware of when I'm doing that and just thinking about how it's impacting my blood sugar and just wanting to feel good. It's not motivated at all towards body goals or anything. It's more thinking like, I want to feel like mental clarity. I want to feel energetic. I don't want to have those big blood sugar dips. Okay, number three. The next thing to check in on is, are you mentally restricting your food in some way? So I have a whole bite-sized episode on this from a couple of weeks ago. So if you really want to do a deep dive into mental restriction, do go back and listen to that. But if you haven't listened to that yet, I'll just very briefly give you a bit of an overview of mental restriction. So mental restriction may be when you are not sort of actively sort of physically restricting your food intake. However, your thoughts and feelings about food and body image are still very much aligned with someone who is dieting. So you're probably feeling a lot of guilt, shame, anxiety around your eating, and mentally and emotionally you're not feeling peaceful with food. So you're certainly not giving yourself 100% permission to enjoy it. And mental restriction as well tends to bring stress, you know, puts you more in that fight flight place. So you're more likely to probably turn to food anyway. You're probably going to have more rules, more all or nothing thinking. Yeah, it's not helpful. Mental restriction really activates the inner rebel as well. So you will, if you are sort of shoulding yourself that you shouldn't be eating sugar, you'll probably go on and eat a lot more of it. Because that's what humans are like. We don't like being restricted and controlled. We like freedom. Of course we do. So if you're having thoughts like, I shouldn't be eating this sugary food. This is such an unhealthy choice. I'm greedy and out of control for eating this. So mental restriction will make you feel deprived. It activates the stress response. It activates your inner rebel. It activates thoughts around all or nothing thinking. So work to really permit these foods in. If you want some more tips on how to stop mental restriction, do go back and listen to my podcast episode from, it's about a couple of weeks ago. Okay. Number four, root out the ghosts of eating past. So as my listener was saying that she recognizes that a lot of her cravings for sugar are rooted in not being allowed to eat this freely as a child. Now, of course, this is going to have an understandable hangover as she moves into adulthood. So what's really helpful here is to really think about your relationship with food in your early life and how you experience food and eating and body image in your family, etc. So think about things like, what are your early memories of food and eating at home? How are foods labelled, if at all, in the family? You know, were they labelled as healthy, unhealthy, good or bad? Were you allowed kind of freedom to actually just go and get a snack if you wanted to, or were there a lot of rules at home? What was your parents' relationship with food like? Did they experience food freedom, or did they come from a place of dieting and a lot of sort of body shame? You know, I think many of our parents have been brought up with so many unconscious internalized messages and haven't really realized the impact of these messages and have unconsciously often then passed these messages on to us. So it's not really about blaming here, but it's about understanding where have these messages come from. How did people in your family or people around you respond to dieting or body size? Did you have a lot of messages around sort of weight stigma, fat phobia? Did people comment on your body and make you feel self-conscious? What were family meal times like? Were they enjoyable times? Did you even have family meal times? Were they stressful? Think about that. Did you have to clear your plate? What was your family's attitude to wasting food? And did you ever turn to food to feel better or to soothe your emotions? So what's really helpful here is to really explore your early relationship with food, look back to the roots of it, and really do this with that kind of deeper awareness and understanding and compassion towards yourself. And then once you bring these messages that you have received into awareness, you can think about, which ones do I want to keep? Which ones do I want to throw out? And which ones have really powerfully influenced me? Because often we're unconsciously following messages, beliefs, thought patterns that have been passed on to us. And we've never stopped with that awareness to really think, does this work for me? And, you know, I know my listener is already aware of having been deprived perhaps of certain foods as a child and why these really are activating that kind of greater sense of reward today. But I would say as well, just really do a deeper dive into this to really explore where these messages have come from. Because when we really bring them into awareness, we can really start to think about how we want to live our lives going forward, and to take ownership of our thoughts and feelings and beliefs, and to maybe let go of some of those things that have been passed on to us that are not serving us. Okay, number 5, is this a long-standing habit? Now, it's really normal, I think, as human beings, we love our habits, we really do. And they can be quite valuable and helpful to us. But also, some of our habits are not so helpful. And we can be quite resistant to changing them. Also, we can be in quite unconscious patterns with our habits. Now, if you think about brushing your teeth this morning, you probably didn't even really think about doing it. It's probably a well-ingrained, helpful habit that you just go about. So if you recognize that you're deep within a habit around eating sugar, try to break up your routine and just do something different, okay? Take a baby step in an alternative direction, experiment with something and see how it feels, and repeat again, because of you may just be triggered by a certain time of day, maybe by a break in the afternoon, maybe by your blood sugar dipping. I don't know, it could be all kinds of things that trigger the habit. So bring that into awareness, notice the habits you are in, and think about just shaking things up a bit, because of we can actually cope with change a lot better than we often give ourselves credit for, but sometimes we just don't believe that's true. I mean, just think about before the pandemic, if you had been told everything that you were going to experience in that pandemic, would have you thought you could have coped? Probably not, but we did, didn't we? We all started like working at home, we had to be indoors, so many changes, but we coped. And I'm not wanting to minimize anyone's distress or difficult times during the pandemic. I know it was an incredibly challenging time for many people, but I just want to use the point to illustrate that as human beings, we underwent huge, huge changes in our daily living, and we did adapt. And that wasn't easy, but we did do it. And you can also do this with other aspects of your daily life and habits. Okay, number 6, not getting enough sleep. So not getting enough sleep can have all sorts of negative effects on your eating patterns. So maybe you're up watching TV or on your phone too late. You know, we all are guilty of these things, aren't we? But, you know, I know for myself, actually, that reflecting on this, not enough sleep is my biggest trigger for craving sugar. So that's really interesting, actually. I hadn't even really thought about that so much recently, but it definitely is. Sleep deprivation can cause a decrease in leptin, your satiety hormone. So you can feel that constant hunger, and you're craving that energy boost. And inadequate sleep as well is also known to cause high level and chronic stress, which consequently increases your afternoon cravings for sugary treats. So really, reflect on your sleep patterns, notice how much sleep you're getting. Do you need to improve your sleep hygiene? What could you do? I know for myself again, when I am getting all of my lovely sleep in, cravings for sugar really aren't a thing. Okay, number 7, using sugar as a reward or a way to sort of treat yourself or celebrate. Now, I think, again, there's nothing wrong with doing this. It's nice, isn't it, to enjoy a lovely piece of birthday cake on someone's birthday, or to celebrate when something goes well, and why not include sugar as part of that? But I guess if you're feeling that you have to reward yourself every single day, maybe with sort of sugary treats, again, I don't want to use the word treat there, that's not so helpful, but I'm not going to go back and re-edit this whole bit. All food is permissible, no good and bad foods. So yes, you know where I'm coming from here. So in a busy and overwhelming life with a never-ending to-do list, food can be the pinnacle of pleasure and the thing we look forward to. And when you've been restricting your eating as well, any food becomes a real preoccupation. And I think particularly the foods that we felt that we weren't allowed to eat, which can often include sugary foods. They can be the things you look forward to, the thing that you plan, the thing that dominates your mind. And food absolutely should be pleasurable, is a joy to eat, and a wonderful and delicious part of a full life. However, if you're coming out of an eating disorder, it may have become the pleasure in your life. You know, sugar particularly may be at the kind of pinnacle, and you may have lost or forgotten about other things that bring you this happiness and contentment. So what's really important here is instead work hard to increase your pleasure quota by finding other ways, in addition to the pleasure of food, still include food, that bring you joy and happiness. So make sure that your self-care bucket is full to overflowing. What do you enjoy doing? What do you like to, who do you like to spend time with? What interests you and lights a spark in your life? What are your hobbies and interests? What gets you into a flow state where you just lose track of time and are immersed in the moment? So maybe you are using sugar if you're not getting enough pleasure and joy, and you're kind of using that as a kind of short-term quick fix. You know, we can all be vulnerable to that. Number 8, emotional coping. So I think, you know, we can often feel tired, overwhelmed, bored, anxious, a whole range of emotions. And you might wish to seek comfort through eating for these emotions. Now, there is nothing wrong as well with comfort eating, but again, you want to have different ways of coping with your emotions in your toolbox. So if you recognize that you're wanting to eat something, but you know you're not doing it for hunger, you're doing it for craving or emotional reasons rather than hunger, stop, take a pause and reflect. And just ask yourself, how am I feeling right now? Can I name the feeling? Where am I feeling the sensations in my body? What purpose is the food serving? You know, what is it that I really need right now? I think quite often we just need a break. We need to just get up, get away from the laptop to do something different. We just need a change of scene. We need some fresh air. And sometimes maybe we need a snack or something as part of that. But maybe we're using sugar sometimes as a way to get that pleasure and temporary sort of relief. And the last one, number 9, is developing awareness of your thoughts and feelings. So this ties in a bit with the kind of whole mental restriction thing and how you're thinking about food. So as you will have heard me say before, we have 60,000 thoughts per day. Many of these thoughts are repetitive, and these thoughts can often be unconscious and habitual. And we can't sadly just flick a switch to change our thoughts, but the first step is raising awareness, becoming more in tune and an observer of your thoughts, so that you can notice when you're going into those unhelpful thought patterns in the first place. So to do this as well, you might need to write in your journal, stop and pause maybe before you're about to eat something to notice your thoughts and feelings. And developing awareness is a skill itself. And this can be frustrating at first because you can think, oh my goodness, there I go again. I'm thinking in that way. You know, you might be thinking, sugar is bad. I'm greedy for eating sugar. You know, and then this activates the all or nothing response, and you kind of self-sabotage and self-punish by eating even more. So developing awareness of your thoughts and feelings can be such a powerful tool. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And thank you so much for listening today. If you're not following me on Instagram, do seek me out at @theeatingdisordertherapist_. And for further support with your relationship with food, do go to theeatingdisordertherapist.co.uk. If you enjoy this podcast, I would be so grateful if you'd follow, rate and review, as it helps it reach so many more listeners. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to sharing another podcast episode with you very soon.